The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. Grounded, supported, and ready to grow. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Whether it's your first time in therapy or your 50th, Grow makes it easier to find a therapist who fits you, not the other way around. They connect you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions, nights, and weekends. You can search by what matters, like insurance, specialty, identity, or availability, to get started in as little as 2 days. And if something comes up, you can cancel up to 24 hours in advance at no cost. There are no subscriptions and no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow helps you find therapy on your time. Whatever challenges you're facing, Grow Therapy is here to help. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid, in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/get started today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/get started. growtherapy.com/get started. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.
Hello.
Hello.
And hello to those listening from space. Because I know they're listening. They're watching and listening from far away. And they're like,
is that what we're going to discover today?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
You guys are fucking up. We have no interest in coming down there because you're going to destroy yourselves.
Well, evidently.
Us simple humans have long been obsessed with the skies above us. And sometimes we see things up there that we just can't explain. In particular, we tend to see flying discs soaring above us. They've been recorded since the Middle Ages. The most famous one happened in 1561, and it's now described as a celestial phenomenon over Nuremberg that appeared in the middle of the day. And if you look up illustrations of it, because obviously there were no photographs because it's the 1500s, it basically looks like a big circle with a face and it's surrounded by flutes and crosses.
Is that not the sun?
No.
Oh, right.
No, it is separate to the sun.
Oh.
And yes, it's very famous. It just happened in the middle of the day and everyone in Nuremberg was like, the fuck is that?
So I'm looking at it now. It really looks like the sun. Am I looking at the right thing?
Yes, yes.
So they're like, that's not the sun.
Yeah.
That's a celestial object.
Yeah.
Okay. They could have made it look different to the sun.
It's the 1500s. Give them a break. That's probably an embroidery.
It really looks like the fucking sun.
I've seen it.
Okay. Moving on.
Anyway, modern killjoys claim that what was actually happening over Nuremberg that day was a phenomenon known as a sun dog, which is also called a false sun. And I've put a picture of one in the script for Sariti Bada that happened in Dakota not very long ago.
What? Oh, so, right.
So the sun is in the middle.
Right.
And there are two suns either side that create this massive circle.
Right. Okay. I was looking at that and I was like, it kind of just looks like you've taken a picture with like a fisheye.
Yes.
Of three lights.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But it's in the sky. And it's massive.
Got it.
So apparently a sun dog is an optical illusion that creates two bright spots either side of the real sun. And that's caused by ice refractions in a 20 degree angle or something. So it's like a rainbow optical illusion, But they do. And apparently they happen a lot more than we think, but we can't see them all the time. That one is just a very bright one.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Shit. I just Googled sun dog.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, I'd be weirded out if I saw that.
Yeah. If I was in 15, 60, whatever, and I saw one of those, I'd be like, beam me up, Scotty. This is fucking nuts.
Let me have a look at again. Look again at this. Now I've seen. All right. Maybe. Okay. Okay. So anyway, if we bounce forward many hundreds of years, post the invention of the printing press on the 25th of January, 1878, a farmer called John Martin reported to a local newspaper that he had seen a dark circular object flying at a wonderful speed in the sky above him.
Wonderful speed is a direct quote.
Some people say that this is the first time that the word saucer was used when describing unexplained celestial objects. Another time that phrase was used was in 1930, when a meteor that fell over Texas and Oklahoma was described as a clay pigeon shooting target, which were referred to as flying saucers at the time.
And that is what they look like.
They do look like flying saucers. So then we have the most famous one, Kenneth Arnold, in 1947. He said that he saw a saucer, a disc, or a pie plate shoot across the sky. He never specifically said flying saucer, but, you know, potato, pie plate.
Yeah, like people are really picky about it. They're like, well, he never actually said flying, he just said saucer. I'm like, come on, Greg, like...
He said pie plate, yeah. Saucer. I mean, a pie plate is just a big saucer. Until the 50s, the terms flying saucer and flying disc were interchangeably used in the press. And then, somehow, we decided to get rid of the word flying disc.
Yeah, we just decided on flying saucer for no particular reason.
Yeah,
really.
It is.
If you could just have easily been flying pie plate.
I mean, exactly. I think if it's like one of those things, if you just keep saying flying saucer, flying saucer, flying saucer, it doesn't sound like we should say it. Maybe we should say flying pie plate. That is more historically accurate. Yeah.
So anyways, these days when we say aliens, you say Paul, the film.
That's a great film.
It is a fucking great film. Okay, but seriously, if we said aliens, you would probably say Area 51.
Mm-hmm.
But why has this military base in the middle of the desert become synonymous with Martians?
Because they're lying to us.
So just in case you care, Area 51 is called Area 51 because of the Atomic Energy Commission and old maps of the Nevada test site. So crucially, where they were testing all types of atomic bombs was the Nevada desert, which I have heard is why Nevada is called the City of Lights, because people would go there to watch the explosions.
Yes.
I haven't been able to corroborate that, so if I'm wrong, I'm sorry.
Yeah. People definitely used to go watch it, but that makes sense.
Anyway, so they were testing all sorts of bombs in and around Area 51, and then they started to test spy planes, which is a spoiler. Anyway, the area around the now famous Groom Lake, which is in the Nevada test site and desert, was simply the 51st area of the base, and that is why it's called Area 51. Very boring. And the area is 120 miles northwest of Sin City, and it hides at the end of an unmarked dirt road. It has gone by many names. Paradise Ranch, to attract workers. Watertown, Dreamland, Red Square, Detachment 3. The list goes on and on.
Who are they trying to attract by calling it Red Square?
Secret commies, probably. And then they would be like, blow
up with an atomic bomb. Watertown in the middle of the desert. Oh, it's like Iceland. Iceland, Greenland. Yeah, sure. So the real beginning of the alien association with Area 51 is down to one man, whose name is Bob Lazar. Now, for some, Bob is a hoaxer. For some, he's a scientist. And for others, he's an international security risk.
I don't know what I feel about Bob Lazar, man.
I want to have a little look. Obviously, I've heard the name Bob Lazar many a time, but I don't think I actually have a picture in my mind of what he looks like.
In your mind's eye.
Oh, well, there you go, Bob Lazar. He kind of looks a bit like Stephen King.
You know what? Yes, he does.
Yes.
Well done.
Maybe we're onto something. I don't know what. This mild kind of look that he has of looking like Stephen King. Maybe it's a conspiracy. But yes, Bob Lazar. Yes, hoaxer, scientist, international security risk. And also maybe the real author of it. I don't know.
To be honest, Stephen King did so much coke that I would not be surprised
if Bob Lazar actually wrote all of Stephen King's novels.
Stephen King doesn't remember writing Cujo because he was so high. Maybe it was Bob Lazar the whole time.
So Bob appeared on a local news station in 1989, backlit and under the fake name Dennis. He told reporter George Knapp that he had been working near Area 51. And he's very particular about that fact.
He's like, I wasn't in Area 51. I was in Area, different number, different name, like three sections over. Sure. But I definitely saw some stuff.
But I was near enough that I could see some flying pie dishes.
Which is either a double bluff, because you're like, why would you not just, if you're lying, why would you not just say that you were in Area 51? Mm-hmm. But maybe he knows that.
It's because he's a great storyteller.
Because he's Stephen King.
He knows. You got to make it believable. Bob Lazar then told the cameras that at the base, the government were reverse engineering alien technologies.
Yeah, so he's like, they've got them, they've got these ships, and they're trying to figure out how they work.
Sure. He claimed to have seen a material that would propel your hand away from it like a magnet.
But it's not a metal. So he's saying that it would push you. So he's thinking, you know, if that technology exists, which it clearly does because I've seen it, that means you can put a force field around a tank, potentially even a whole city, and that could revolutionise the economy, and it's a secret and nobody knows about
it. Yeah, you can make hovercrafts, which would be cool. And he also said he had seen what he called antimatter reactors.
So he says that's the thing that we haven't figured out, is that, like, as soon as we crack how to make an antimatter reactor, we will be able to make all of these things that aliens can make, but we don't know how to do it.
Is that what they're trying to do in the Da Vinci Code?
It's probably what they're trying to do in Russia.
So when asked why he would come forward and risk his job like this, the physics and electronics graduate told Channel 8 News that he was sick and tired of getting absolutely no recognition for all those books he wrote. No, that he thought that withholding this kind of information was a crime against science and an insult to the American people.
Yeah, he sort of makes the argument that if the scientific community were given this information, like, God knows what they would be able to do with it.
Yeah.
He's forgetting about leaking it to the Chinese.
Yeah, I mean, he's like, I am a scientific whistleblower.
Yes.
And the people must know.
Exactly that. Bob Lazar also described a bone scanner in one of his interviews, and he says that the workers on Area 51 and the surrounding bases used it to gain access into the labs. And it does look like something that in the 80s would be considered science fiction. You put your hand on it and there are pins in between your fingers, and then it scans your bone structure and then it lets you in, right? And he's describing this in 1989 and everyone's like, that's not fucking real. Anyway, very recently they released it and they were like, yeah, that we did have those.
What?
Yes. And it's exactly what he describes, right?
Bob.
So Bob Lazar uses that information as vindication for everything he is claiming inside or near to Area 51, being irrefutable proof that there is another world and the government has been hiding it for us for years.
Is this that Bob Lazar is legit? Or is this like, if George Orwell was around, he'd be like, I see, I told you. Is he just because he's a writer? He's a storyteller. And he correctly predicted this one thing and he's like, I fucking knew it. I mean, like, you know, Alex Jones was like, the water's turning the frogs gay. Kind of is.
Yeah, exactly. This is why I'm conflicted. So he comes out with this interview in 1989 pretending he's Dennis. Very quickly after that, he says, no, I'm not Dennis. I'm Bob Lazar and I'm a scientist. I've been working near Area 51. I've also worked at Los Alamos, which is where Oppenheimed. And I went to Caltech and I went to MIT. Mm-hmm. All of those institutions were like, we've never heard of this guy in our fucking life.
Uh-oh.
No record of him at all.
Oh, Bob.
Why would they admit to it? And apparently, Bob Lazar's name does appear in an old phone book for Los Alamos Labs where he claimed to have worked as a scientist. I've seen a picture of it. It is there. Robert Lazar. This is his number. This is his lab.
I'm also like, Bob, right? I'm not saying he's lying. I don't know what's going on. But if he was there, and yes, I can totally understand why the university's like, he's got nothing to do with us.
Yeah.
But he must have been at uni in like, the 50s.
Well, no, I mean, if he's on TV at 89 as like, and he's still only just middle-aged now.
Oh, right. So. Okay. So the picture I saw of him is now?
Mm.
Oh, okay then. So he was at the, it was at uni, like, way later. Yeah. How's it not one picture of you at uni that you have?
Well, this is it. I wonder whether they just missed one phone book.
They did a full swipe. Yeah,
that's break how important Bobblers are.
Break into his house, destroy all of his beloved yes. pictures. Destroy every yearbook that every person ever had with him in it, but forgot one phone book.
Yes, and that is my problem with yes. that element of the story. And also the way he talks about it when he is questioned now. Mm-hmm. He's like, I don't understand why everyone gets so caught up in those details. And I'm like, because it underpins your whole story, Bob.
Yeah, yeah. It's troublesome. Yeah. It's irksome.
So if you want to find out more, there is a documentary on Prime, I believe, all about Bob Lazar. And it does open with the quite promising line, the Earth is not the centre of the universe, at least not anymore. Anyway, it is probably the worst documentary I have ever seen.
Oh.
And I have watched a lot of them.
Ouch.
I could not finish it.
Oh, God.
Watch it if you must.
No, thanks.
It's not even poorly made. It's just so fucking boring. George Knapp is in it, like the original journalist.
What's it called?
It's called like Bob Lazar and the Big Fat Lie or something. No, I'll look it up. It's called Bob Lazar, colon, Area 51 and Flying Saucers.
Oh, no.
It was made in 2018.
You need a more dramatic.
Yeah, yeah. Like Bob Lazar and the Big Fat Lie. I think, you know, yeah. watch that.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. Grounded, supported, and ready to grow. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Whether it's your first time in therapy or your 50th, Grow makes it easier to find a therapist who fits you, not the other way around. They connect you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions nights and weekends. You can search by what matters, like insurance, specialty, identity, or availability to get started in as little as 2 days. And if something comes up, you can cancel up to 24 hours in advance at no cost. There are no subscriptions and no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow helps you find therapy on your time. Whatever challenges you're facing, Grow Therapy is here to help. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid, in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/get started today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/get started. growtherapy.com/get started. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.
So anyway, hoax or not, Lazar set things off in the 80s. No matter how unlikely his claims were, or whether he even worked there in the first place, the connection between Area 51 and extraterrestrials was cemented forever in pop culture. That's crazy that, like, imagine being like one man who maybe just lied, and then you set off this entire bomb that permeates pop culture and our psyches forever.
Yeah.
That's wild. So in some texts, Lazar claimed to have seen alien autopsy photographs during his time at Groom Lake. And some theorists think that these must have been bodies from the 1947 Roswell crash. But Lazar was not the first to connect the two places.
Yeah, his interview really sort of slams it into pop culture forever, there were people who were making the connection between the two places. But it's, they're fucking 2,000 miles apart. Mm. It's across the country.
Yeah. Now, some people think that the debris from the original Roswell crash was taken to Area 51, even though transporting alien remains almost 2,000 miles does seem a little bit unlikely. That is the theory.
I just don't believe there isn't a secret military base. If there is this nationwide alien program, that was the only one.
Maybe it's hard to keep a secret. It's better to just keep one secret in one place, multiple but alien autopsy.
Two dead aliens to keeping them secret for 2,000 miles. What if you need gas? Just to put a t-shirt and a hat on them. He's reading the newspaper.
So in case you live under a rock or have never watched the E4 series.
Fucking cracking series.
I never actually did watch Roswell.
Really?
I've seen enough of it in passing that I'm aware of what it's about.
I mean, it was basically Smallville.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. It was the same guy, wasn't it? But yes, in case you didn't watch it, here is what the hell we are talking about when we talk about the Roswell incident. What the military and government claim to be a weather balloon crashed over New Mexico in 1947. But if we all remember to last year when the Chinese were like, oh, that's not a spy balloon. Mm-hmm. That's just a weather balloon. Oh, it's just flown into American territory. Oh, no, you shot it down. Don't look. Oh, it's self-destructs. It's just a weather balloon.
You've just blown this whole thing wide open, by the way. You've ruined my punchline.
Oh, no. Let's crack on. So the wreckage was discovered by rancher Mac Brazel. He stared at the chunks of metal held together by tape and foil reflectors and was totally baffled, especially as he heard an explosion the night before. So he went to the sheriff of Roswell, not knowing what else to do.
But before he toddled off to the sheriff, Brazel did have quite a good look at the debris in one of his fields. It was unlike anything he'd ever seen before. The pieces looked metallic, but they were far lighter than any metal he had ever seen. And if they were scrunched up or bent, they would regain their original form automatically after the pressure was released. Again, unlike anything Mac had ever seen or even conceived of. This is 1947. And even more interestingly than that, there were strange markings all over the pieces of metal. Brazel had no idea what they meant, and he could only describe them as hieroglyphics to the press. And the sheriff of Roswell had even less idea what he was looking at, but he had heard reports of flying objects in the sky the night before. So he did the only thing he knew how to do, and he called the Air Force, who had a base nearby.
Let me get this straight. There's an Air Force base nearby, and they're like, there's something in the sky. Cool.
And the Air Force quickly hurried in military personnel to sweep away the mysterious metals as the locals of Roswell looked on confused. The shards of metallics were taken off to an airbase, supposedly for testing.
And there are those who believe to this day that there were extraterrestrial bodies recovered from that crash site that were taken off to Area 51, nearly 2,000 miles away, for autopsy.
Like the famous alien autopsy video.
Yeah.
Was filmed in London.
Yeah. Well, we would have called it a post-mortem, but there you go. It's not quite as catchy,
doesn't
is it?
Doesn't alliterate, no.
Alien post-mortem. Now, a couple of enthusiasts and authors of the book The Truth About the UFO Crash at Roswell, Schmidt and Randall, claim to have eyewitness testimony of extraterrestrial bodies being recovered from the site.
They say.
I mean, if I was going to write a book called The Truth About the UFO Crash at Roswell, I would also say that.
So they say that they interview the pilot who, like, surveilled the space and was like, them there's bodies. And they claim to speak to a lot of people who were in the recovery operation. I don't believe them.
I don't want to be like, there's nothing going on, because do I think the government lied to us? Yes.
Mm.
But do I think that the government is also massively capable of like keeping a secret like that for years and years and years? I don't know. But then are they using their incompetence to smokescreen me?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
That is something they do all the time.
This is what I mean. So I don't know. So I'm not here to like be like, there's nothing going on. It's only what we can see. And I don't believe there could be literally anything. I don't know. But also some of the people that piggyback onto this kind of conspiracy theory stuff that we have seen are also crazy. So who do you believe? I don't know. Nobody. Believe nobody. Except us. Now, apparently these remains that Schmidt and Randall are talking about in their book were found in, quote, fairly good condition, even though they had been there for 6 days in the desert and also had crashed out of the sky and also had been partially eaten by animals. That wouldn't be my definition of in fairly good condition. Now, they were, according to the book interviewees, definitely biological entities. About 4 foot tall, with big heads, large eyes and small mouths. 4 fingers and good old arms. Exactly like Roger the alien.
It reminded me of what you said about the satanic panic the other day, about how kids always end up saying the same thing.
Mm.
Why do we all think aliens look like that, if it's not true?
Again, it feels like somebody somewhere started that little grey man thing, and then we all sort of got so used to seeing that image again and again and again, and just replicate it time and time again. But it is interesting. Now, apparently, an army nurse who claimed to have worked on the preliminary autopsy at Roswell before Paul and his friends were sent on their merry way to Area 51 remarked on the fragility of the creature's skulls and bones. According to Schmidt and Randall, those who participated in the alien autopsies were kept silent by the military for years. Naturally.
But as reports of the so-called spy balloon emerged in the 80s and 90s, these eyewitnesses, quote-unquote, started to crawl out of the woodwork. However, in 1994, all was revealed by the Pentagon. Apparently, the debris that was discovered that day was no weather balloon. But they weren't unhuman either. Since the end of World War II, a group of geophysicists and oceanographers from Columbia University had been working on an espionage project called Project Mogul. And their job was to create hyper-lightweight, high-altitude balloons capable of carrying sound sensors for thousands of miles across the Earth's atmosphere, all the way over to Mother Russia to eavesdrop on any nuclear weapons tests that might be going on over there. So essentially, Project Mogul were testing spy balloons, similar to the Chinese ones that ran aground in the USA last year. So the story that the US military are now telling about Roswell is the debris discovered in 1947 was the remains of a 700-foot string of neoprene balloons, trackers and sonic equipment launched by Project Mogul. And Mac Brazel, he's never going to see neoprene before.
Mm.
He's never going to see an algebraic symbol before, you know? So I can understand why it seemed completely otherworldly to him. And on top of that, the Pentagon revealed that Project Mogul was so top secret at the time of the Roswell incident that the Air Force base near the crash site would have known absolutely nothing about it. So the sheriff of Roswell, New Mexico, would have known even less. But they would say that, wouldn't they?
They would. Now, anyway, just as Bob Lazar kicked this all off again in 1989, it was his 2019 appearance on the Joe Rogan Experience that gave way to an all-new kind of Area 51-related phenomenon. California-based Matty Roberts was among one of the millions who heard Joe Rogan's episode with Bob Lazar, and he had the bright idea to start a Facebook event titled Storm Area 51. They Can't Stop All of Us. I remember seeing this. Now, the page quickly gained thousands of followers. The idea was they would meet in the early hours of September the 20th, 2019, and get inside Area 51 to see them aliens. Within days, the page had over millions of RSVPs. Quickly, though, not wanting to be responsible for Firefest 2.0, Roberts distanced himself from the event.
That's exactly what he says as well. He was like, whoa, man, like, this was a joke. Like, please, just don't do that.
But again, it is just very telling of the fact that there is such a level of distrust between the public and the government, which I understand. I understand that people are like, fuck them. They can't stop all of us. Let's just go find out what the fuck is going on. Yeah. And I can also understand why he was like, no thanks, again, actually.
He's like literally a student. He's so young.
Oh my God, that's hilarious. But didn't matter whether he was in on it or not anymore, because the event went ahead without him. Although those who arrived in the tiny town of Rachel, Nevada, the closest to the base, and also home to the world-famous Ailey Inn, expecting some kind of military operation, would have been sorely disappointed.
So comedian, that's what I reckon, went to Storm Area 51. Mm-hmm. I love him. He's Australian. And he went to this. And yet again, like anything interesting I ever hear, I heard this on Dan Schreiber's podcast. And he was like, the alien is the weirdest fucking place because you can order galactic fries. They're just fries. There's nothing galactic. There's not. They don't even have sauce on them.
Love it. I've watched a documentary set there. I can't remember what it is.
It's a Louis Theroux Weird Weekend.
Maybe it's a Louis Theroux Weird Weekend. Yeah. Oh, it's just, I. You know what? We need these people, though. We need these people to be out there doing weird shit. So I'm here for that. But yes, like I said, these people who turned up were going to be sorely disappointed. Because what they were met with, instead of a military operation, were just a bunch of people. Nearly 6,000, in fact, who just really liked aliens.
Yeah, it's quite sweet, really.
It is very sweet. And although a few people did make it quite near the Area 51 gates, the security of the military base was not challenged. Like, at all.
Most people were so hungover they didn't get up in time.
I love it. Actually, most attendees dressed up and drank limited edition alien-themed Bud Light. And of course, many of them were just meme lords looking for an excuse to wear a Pepe the Frog costume. The serious alien hunters looked on at this event in scorn and had their own party at the nearby Alien Research Center instead.
We said no humors. It's so pathetic.
There was also a party in Vegas the same weekend, which Matty Roberts did attend, mainly to sign autographs for people wearing Green Lives Matter t-shirts.
So no one at the Storm Area 51 event saw them aliens. But are they there? Probably not. But there are a few other reasons why people have always been wary of Area 51, despite the bright lights of nuclear tests belonging to the Nevada nuclear testing range.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal, $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. Grounded, supported, and ready to grow. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Whether it's your first time in therapy or your 50th, Grow makes it easier to find a therapist who fits you, not the other way around. They connect you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions, nights, and weekends. You can search by what matters, like insurance, specialty, identity, or availability, to get started in as little as 2 days. And if something comes up, you can cancel up to 24 hours in advance at no cost. There are no subscriptions and no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow helps you find therapy on your time. Whatever challenges you're facing, Grow Therapy is here to help. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid, in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/get started today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/get started. growtherapy.com/get started. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.
Save big money on everything for your next bathroom project now at Menards. Upgrade your bathroom with Max. With more than 1,000 showers, bathtubs, and surrounds, you're sure to find exactly what you need to add luxury and style to your bathroom. Save big on our entire selection of Max bathroom products. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. You may remember deep in your mind cave, we once told you about a podcast, wasn't once, it was last year, called Wisecrack, from our good old buddy old pals over at Tenderfoot. Wisecrack is a really unique blend of stand-up comedy set and a shocking true crime case. Basically, a comedian describes the night he found himself at the centre of a double murder. Wisecrack has gone on to make Apple's best podcasts list, and that's full of people like us, so you know it's true. And it's nominated for iHeart and Ambie Awards this year. And it was The Guardian's podcast of the year. Top tier, number one, top spot. And now Wisecrack is heading on a true crime slash comedy tour with comedian Ed Hedges performing his stand-up set live. And it's in a city that is maybe, very possibly, near you. Wisecrack's tour will hit Dublin and Manchester as well as London on Valentine's Day. And then it will head into the US for February and March. For dates and ticket info, visit wisecracklive.com. That's wisecracklive.com and search Wisecrack in your podcast app to listen to the show and see what all the noise and hype is about, my friend. We need to remember that the area itself, the testing range, is massive and there is nothing there at all. And that's entirely on purpose. In 1954, President Eisenhower requested a secret location where he could start a high-altitude reconnaissance program. And he found one in Area 51. And what does that mean, my friends? It means spy planes. Not spy balloons. We've moved on.
Mm-hmm.
And what are spy planes? They're flying objects that look funny and go faster than what we would expect. The first one tested at Groom Lake was the U-2 spy plane, which, like Project Mogul, was designed to spy on the commies who were getting dangerously close to becoming a nuclear power. The U-2 could travel 70,000 feet in the air and travel 3,000 miles without needing to refuel, all whilst carrying 700 pounds worth of cameras, high-tech enough to collect intelligence from the ground below. And in 1960, a U-2 was shot down in Soviet airspace, which forced the US to admit that they were doing naughty spying.
So they needed a better plane, and along came the SR-71 Blackbird, which was even better and more sneaky than the U-2. It could fly 80,000 feet in the air and faster than 2,000 miles an hour. So it couldn't be taken out of the sky by enemy fire. So if you were to get into Area 51 now, you'd probably find the next in the US spy plane range. But still, it isn't hard to see why an area testing spy planes for decades in secret would get a reputation for strange goings on in the sky. Things like drones, decoy flares, stealth bombers, and all-round weird classified stuff were happening above our heads. And then we have the nuclear testing. There was plenty still to do after the destruction of Japan. And this was called Operation Plum Bob. Plum Bob's plum job included explosions, troop readiness exercises, and some accidental detonations and flinging of debris into living targets. And actually, after the US told everyone to stop nuclear testing and promised that they would definitely, definitely not continue doing it themselves.
They, of course, kept doing it in secret. And eventually, disaster struck near Area 51. A 148-pound chunk of radioactive material was shot up into the air. And that meant there was an entire subsection of Area 51 that nobody could go to for over 6 weeks. And after that 6-week period was over, men in hazmat suits were sent in to scrub the land, a la Chernobyl. So again, anyone without top-level security who saw that from afar would probably have some questions, because we always see hazmat suits in alien films. Also, to allude to Saru's point earlier about smokescreens, it completely suited the CIA and the Pentagon for people to think that there was something going on at Area 51 that wasn't actually happening. So it isn't impossible to believe that a misinformation campaign was in place and higher-ups had no interest in displacing any alien rumours because they were too worried about people finding out about the spy planes and the dirty bombs. Actually, Obama was the very first president ever to use the phrase Area 51 in a public address. He declassified it live on stage at an awards ceremony at the Kennedy Center. I think it is important to point out that, like, yes, a lot of the early sightings and the sightings that we've talked about happened in, like, the 20s, 30s, 40s, where Area 51 wasn't really operational. So people are going to be like, so, aha, that is a halt. But, like, people retroactively connect things all the time. So I don't know if that... I would love to believe it. Like,
oh, my God, I'd love to believe it.
Like, are there aliens? Almost certainly. Like, it's almost impossible that we are on our own.
No. It's that quote, right? Who said it? I don't know. But it's like, either we're completely alone in the universe or we're not. And both of those thoughts are completely terrifying.
I think it's the guy who wrote 21 Space Odyssey.
No idea. But I totally believe. Absolutely. It's not even believe. It's statistically impossible. It feels like a statistical impossibility that we are the only creatures in the entire universe. That is ridiculous. And it does feel a little bit like the Catholic Church being like, the Earth is the center of the universe.
It is him. It's Arthur C. Clarke.
Well, there you go. Arthur C. Clarke put it best. So, yeah, there's no way it's not. And do I think that there's intelligent enough stuff near enough to get near to us? Maybe.
Mm.
I want to believe.
But are they at Area 51?
I'd have moved them by now if I was the government. I won't keep them there.
It's unlikely. But I do think that that doesn't necessarily make the base not interesting, because it is entirely possible, if not probable, that every major advancement in American espionage had happened inside that base.
Which is fascinating.
It's just as interesting as aliens, in my opinion.
There you go.
Because they've saved and killed a load of people, if that's true.
So that's it, guys. That is our shorthand on Area 51. We'll come back to this again, aliens. I think it's fascinating. Maybe we can do something on the Fermi paradox, or maybe we can do something on ancient aliens building all of the monuments. I don't know. We'll come back to it. Suggestions.
Get Graham Hancock on the phone.
There you go. Oh, what a man. I haven't thought about him in ages. But yeah, there you go. And we will see you next week for something else.
Hooray.
Bye.
You may remember deep in your mind cave, we once told you about a podcast, wasn't once, it was last year, called Wisecrack, from our good old buddy old pals over at Tenderfoot. Wisecrack is a really unique blend of stand-up comedy set and a shocking true crime case. Basically, a comedian describes the night he found himself at the centre of a double murder. Wisecrack has gone on to make Apple's best podcasts list, and that's full of people like us, so you know it's true. And it's nominated for iHeart and Ambi Awards this year. And it was The Guardian's podcast of the year. Top tier, number one, top spot. And now Wisecrack is heading on a true crime / comedy tour with comedian Ed Hedges performing his stand-up set live. And it's in a city that is maybe, very possibly, near you. Wisecrack's tour will hit Dublin and Manchester, as well as London on Valentine's Day. And then it will head into the US for February and March. For dates and ticket info, visit wisecracklive.com. That's wisecracklive.com, and search Wisecrack in your podcast app to listen to the show and see what all the noise and hype is about, my friend.